Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Radio for Your Mind. It's Troy Dooley, the host today, and we are having a blast. I do, right off the bat, and I'll do this throughout the show today. I want to remind everyone that we have ACES Radio Live with myself and my great, great friend and partner, Jim Gilhouse, this afternoon, 5 p.m. Central. Now, if you're new to Radio for Your Mind, you don't know about ACES Radio Live, you do not want to miss this show. Jimmy's been doing this show forever. He graciously allowed me to be a part of this show, and I get stoked because we cover it all. A to Z, you name it, we're on there, we're cranking this puppy out. So I don't want anyone to miss ACES Radio Live tonight. But we're in Seth Godin's book, and there's been great, great reviews on this book, Lynchpin, Are You Indispensable? Now, for some of you, you know, Tribes was his first book really away from the traditional marketing stuff that he had done. Lynchpin is way, way beyond anything that I've seen him do ever. This book is an amazing book because it's talking about you. It's talking about me. It's talking about what we have sold ourselves short for. And, you know, it's interesting because we see this in politics. We see it in a variety of things right now where people are really selling themselves short, you know, and whether it's Congress, whether it's just the traditional folks right at home, everyone seems to be looking for change. They want change. And I think this book right here is just a great way to look for change. And today we're in the chapter Becoming a Lynchpin. Now, if you've been with us and you've been hanging out with us, you know that a lynchpin is that indispensable person within the organization. That person who doesn't follow the rules, isn't focused on tradition, isn't focused on what used to be or because we have to or any of that. They're the person constantly looking for a way to improve things, looking for a way to become indispensable. And Seth starts this book off today. You can't get far without one. I love that little phrase. He says a linchpin is an unassuming piece of hardware, something you can buy for 69 cents at the local hardware store. It's not glamorous, but it's essential. It holds the wheel onto the wagon, the finger onto the widget. Now, here's where it gets pretty profound. Listen, every successful organization has at least one linchpin. Some have dozens, even thousands. A linchpin is the essential element, the person who holds part of the organization together. Without the linchpin, things fall apart. You know, in direct selling, I've met a variety of linchpins inside and outside of corporate offices. In the faith-based arena, where I spend a boatload of my time, I've met an organization that's full of linchpins. It's called Catalyst. I watched one linchpin. It's kind of funny. His name's John Maxwell. I've watched him go out there and become a linchpin within the faith-based community, become a linchpin within the business community, become a linchpin in a generation of leaders that were far removed from his current age. And then I watched him develop linchpins. I watched him sell organizations, leave organizations, retire from organizations, go back to his first love, which is Equip, his nonprofit. And in doing so, the linchpins that he left behind have gone on to create their own stuff. Another linchpin that I've hung out with a little bit is Dave Ramsey, and watching what he's done, and it's amazing how many families that he's helped during, especially during this recession. See, it's funny, if we start looking around, we start seeing linchpins all over the place. Seth asks this, is there anyone in an organization who is absolutely irreplaceable? The answer to that's probably not. But the most essential people are so difficult to replace, so risky to lose, and so valuable that they may as well be irreplaceable. Entire corporations are built around a linchpin, or more likely, scattering of them throughout the organization. See, that's when you know you've built something big. That's when you know that you've left a legacy, is when you start developing other linchpins. There's two things that Seth says that we need to look at when we look at this. Number one, your business needs more linchpins. It's scary to rely on a particular employee, but in a post-industrial economy, you have no choice. So you should have many linchpins. And second, you're capable of becoming a linchpin, and if you do, you'll discover that it's worth the effort. See, the whole kicker in becoming a linchpin is that you're going to go against tradition. You're going to go against what the people in school and the business consultants will tell you. You're going to get down to some stuff that probably I started learning at 20, 21 years old as I started studying first NLP and Tony Robbins. You start to learn that it's about the relationship first. It's about learning what people need and want. It's not about going in and telling people what you're going to do for them. It's going in and finding out what people need. See, I think when you get right down to it and you start looking around, you're going to find people in your life that's a linchpin. It may not even be in your business. You know, Seth tells a good little story here. Listen to this. What about the great guy down at the vegetable stand? You know, the one who makes it worth a special trip past the cheaper than more and more convenient superstores. If he left that place, if he got rid of all of his organic food, what would happen? See, he's a linchpin probably in your life. Or what about the consultant that you call on the phone, the mentor that you call when you need something, the spiritual counselor that you go to? What happens if they disappeared? See, these are linchpins in your life. I'll never forget Darren Hardy when he wrote me an email not too long ago. Because he said one phrase that has just stuck into my brain. And it's greatness comes with a price. See, being a linchpin comes with a price. Being a linchpin means that you're going to be outside the box. I think that's the key here. If you want to be a linchpin, in the next 22 minutes, we're going to cover that. You know, this is truly the key. Listen to this. There are bosses who might be threatened by someone who can create forward motion, but the shareholders and owners and board of every organization on earth desperately want forward motion. The distinction is subtle, calming. Your boss's anxiety is the first step in getting the organization to embrace change. See, the key is to embrace change. He goes on and he talks about Richard Branson. Sir Richard Branson, successful men out there, created the brand Virgin. Virgin Airlines, Virgin Records, Virgin Phones. Now it's Virgin Spacecraft. Here's what Seth writes. He says, I spent some time with Sir Richard, and I can tell you that you could certainly do most of what he does, perhaps better than even he does it, except for what he does for about 5 minutes a day. In those 5 minutes, he creates billions of dollars of worth of value every few years. And neither you nor I would have a prayer in doing what he does. Listen to this. Branson's real job is seeing new opportunities, making decisions that work, and understanding the connection between his audience, his brand, and his ventures. See, that right there is what makes Sir Richard Branson so indispensable, not just as a businessman, but as a consultant. A long-haired hippie kid that started his whole career out with a record store in Great Britain has become an international icon. Hasn't always hit 1,000, but he learns from his mistakes and he continues to go on. Write this down. It's called the Law of the Linchpin. The law of the linchpin leverage. The more value you create in your job, the fewer clock minutes of labor you actually spend creating that value. Let's say this again. The law of the linchpin leverage. The more value you create in your job, the fewer clocked minutes of labor you actually spend creating value. In other words, most of the time, you're not being brilliant. Most of the time, you do stuff that ordinary people can do. See, to become a linchpin and to leverage, it isn't about what you're doing that everybody else does. It's about being a little bit different. It's the emotional value that you're adding to it. See, when you get right down to it, there's not a whole lot of new under the sun. There's not like it's new creations. There's new methodologies, and we see different tweaks on stuff. But when you get right down to it, it comes down to the art and the insight and the bravery of value creation. See, when you decide you're going to think outside the box, when you decide I want to be a linchpin, you're going to stop being a dull, negative, disillusioned crybaby. You're going to stop worrying about the economy. You're going to stop worrying about the collapse of the government. You're going to stop worrying about who's getting rich on Wall Street. What you're going to start doing is adding value. Generation Y, the millennials that are growing into adults right now, are the most amazing demographic group I've studied in a while, because they just flat don't give a rip about what everybody says about, oh, the economy's this or you can't do that. They believe success is action. You tell them they can't do something and they'll prove you wrong and they'll go figure out a way to do it. It's truly a massive shift in the thought process from the Generation X and the baby boomers. No longer are we focused on going out and getting a job and doing things normally. Now we're wanting to think outside the box. You see, a whole generation. Seth calls it a freestyled world of idea creation and idea manipulation. I thought, wow, man, that is a rock deal. He says a great salesman might deliver 1,000 times as much productivity as a mediocre one. It's the great salesperson who opens an entire region or an account in a new industry, while the ordinary one merely goes down the call list doing quite average work. You know, when I got a call to go to Austin a couple weeks ago, I met with some people. They're all linchpins. They all work in tandem together and keep a machine rolling. But here was the greatest thing that happened, and this is when I knew I'd made the right decision. I started having average and ordinary people in direct selling call me and say, hey, that won't work, dude. Why are you putting your brand behind that? That won't work. Dude, we've checked that out, and that's going to take some hard work. That won't work. And I started laughing. And then some great linchpins in direct selling, men and women who have created massive value for the last 15 and 20 years, started calling saying, dude, that's a one of a kind. That's a little sleeper there that you found. Man, I'm excited for you. Keep us posted. I started having CEOs call to say, hey, is there some kind of strategic alliance we can form? Man, I don't know. The difference between mediocre and great is just a little dash. Just a little different thought process, just a little bit of creativity, just a little out-of-the-box thinking. You're probably with a company today. You're probably with an organization that's an out-of-the-box thinker. Warren Woodward comes to mind. Controversial figure in his own right, but a linchpin. It's amazing when you see these. Corey Johnson, another linchpin. Rob Turner, another linchpin. Rod Smith, another linchpin. When you go across the spectrum in sports, in the spiritual world, in the health world, in the self-development world, in direct selling, it doesn't matter. You find linchpins and they start standing out. They start making a difference. You know, and I think one of the things that really puts it together, we talked about this yesterday, was fear and pain. A lot of people find security in mediocrity. Sadly, that's not the way to go. Seth writes this, finding security in mediocrity is an exhausting process. You can work on only so many hours, fret only so much more, be a slightly better typist or slightly faster coder. That's insignificant. Did you ever wonder why Microsoft doesn't reinvent the wheel all the time? Why is it they spend millions of dollars to go out and buy a small software company and bring it under their brand and tweak the stuff? It's because they know if they do that, they're years ahead of their competition. See, that's the cool part about this. See, in the old society, we heard that knowledge was power. The smarter you are with knowledge, the better off you're going to be. But now you don't have to worry about that. This is an internet-based world. Now you can go out and find all the knowledge you want. Seth writes this. I'm going to expound on it. Depth of knowledge combined with good judgment is worth a lot. Depth of knowledge combined with diagnostic skills or nuisance insight is worth a lot too. Knowledge alone, though, I'd rather get faster and cheaper from an expert I find online. If I need a great direct mail letter, it's far cheaper and faster to hire a direct market mail writer to write a letter for me than it is to hire someone and have him on staff for one letter that I need every month. See, here's the kicker, folks. It's the wisdom that comes with that knowledge. See, when you've accumulated the knowledge, if you can tweak it out and bring it into wisdom, if you can take that and make it unique, if you add value, the sky is the limit. See, people know that if they only need the knowledge, they can go to WebMD, they can go to Wikipedia, they can go to Mayo Clinic Online. They can go anywhere they want to go. They can go to SethGoden.com. See, it goes beyond that. It goes beyond just being an expert. It goes being an indispensable expert. See, that's the kicker. Seth writes this. Sure, it's possible to randomly challenge the conventions of your field and luckily find a breakthrough. It's far more likely, though, that you will design a great website or direct a powerful movie or leak a breakthrough product development if you understand the status quo better than anybody else. We call that beginner's luck. See, it goes beyond that. It's becoming an emotional connection, emotional labor. It's taking it to the next level. The term emotional labor was first coined 40 years ago by sociologist Ariel Horschild in her book, The Managed Heart. She described it as the management of feeling to create a publicly observable facial or bodily display. In other words, it's work you do with your feelings, not your body. Never have I taken a job, not since I was in high school, out of necessity. When I've looked for jobs, I've wanted jobs that I would be emotionally tied to. Money, very important. We all got to have it to live. There is no doubt about that. But when you get right down to it, how much or how important is the money? See, a lot of people think, well, just go get a great job. If I just go get a great job, everything is going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. It doesn't work that way. In a study that was done, and it's funny because this is from author Richard Florida. He polled 20,000 creative professionals and gave them a choice of 38 factors that motivated them to do their best work. These are linchpins. These are creative people. Listen to this. Number one, challenge and responsibility. Number two, flexibility. Number three, a stable work environment. Number four, money. Number five, professional development. Number six, peer recognition. Number seven, stimulating colleagues and bosses. Number eight, exciting job content. Number nine, organizational culture. Number 10, location and community. Money, number four. Now listen, most of the people listening to this call either own, run, or are creating a direct selling organization. And when you look at the old-fashioned hype crap stuff that's on the internet, that's out in magazines, it's about the money. It's about the toys. It's about that lifestyle. All comes back to money. But yet here we see that that's not even what people are looking for is number one, not number two and not number three. Number one is challenge and responsibility. Number two is flexibility. Number three, a stable work environment. Let's look at this for a second. If people are looking for a challenge, there's not a direct selling organization in the world today that, if it's a legitimate organization, does not provide that challenging culture. Being in business for themselves, it gives them that additional responsibility. You're going to have to work with them because they're probably used to being a clog and or cog instead of a doggone linchpin, but you can do that. Number two, direct selling provides flexibility. You get to work your own hours. You get to work with people. You're not by yourself. You can make it happen. You get to fulfill your dreams, your goals, your objectives. Number three, stable work environment. If you're a leader that's created a system, you're giving them a stable work environment. If you're a company that provides them the tools, you're giving them a good work environment. If they're working out of their own home or at their Starbucks, if that's their office, then they're working in their work environment. It's what they want. And then number four, there's not a legitimate direct selling organization I've ever seen that doesn't provide the opportunity to make the money that you need, the money that you want. See, this is what it takes to start getting it cranking. This is what it takes to take it to the next level. Most people think it's all in a resume. Send in your resume, you'll get a job. When Dennis Dottel and I sat down this last couple of weeks, it wasn't about a resume. It was about the fact that as we started to grow and started to realize that we had a connection, he started looking at what other people had said, started realizing that my passion, what I'm really good at is what I would call a troubleshooter or a cleaner. It's when you look at individual people, you look at organizations, you look at companies, you try to think outside the box and create something that's going to be long-lasting, that's going to be totally different. It's not perfection. Every great artist has a flaw in their work. Every great artist has some little weakness. I love it. In the Marine Corps, we have Colonel Krecklich. And he is a unique individual. And here's what he said, and I think this is great. He says, in many cases, the individual Marine will be the most conspicuous symbol of American foreign policy, and it will potentially influence not only the immediate tactical situation, but the operational and strategic levels as well. And the reason he said that is because all of a sudden, everything is on a cell phone, a portable camera. It's in social networks. It's all over the place. The lowest corporal can now be front and center. It's not the generals that go to the front line. It's the sergeants. It's the corporals. It's the lance corporals, the privates. Right now, you have an opportunity to go out front as a linchpin. You may be that 360 leader Maxwell talks about that's just deep in the organization. But here's the kicker. Seth writes this good. If you will take time to forget about the fear, fear's got a place, but you're going to have it there. Just don't worry about that. You start looking at the emotional value that you can add. You start looking for changes in the corporation, changes in the company, changes in the organization that affect the people. You start realizing it's a we society, not a me society, and the sky's the limit. All of a sudden, you'll be in a league of your own. You'll be an indispensable linchpin. Seth writes this, the challenge of becoming a linchpin solely based on your skill at playing a craft or doing a task or playing sports is that the market can find another person with the same skill. But when you go out there and start building emotional value, that's what sets you apart. That's what's going to allow you to take it to the next level. There's three things that happen as you start to become a linchpin. Write these down. You're going to see fearlessness, recklessness, and fecklessness. That's F-E-C-K-L-E-S-S. Listen to what Seth writes. Organizations seek out people who are fearless, but go out of their way to weed out the reckless. So what's the difference? Listen to this. This is great. Fearless doesn't mean without fear. What it means in practice is unafraid. Unafraid of things that you shouldn't be afraid of. Being fearless means giving a presentation to an important customer without losing a night's sleep. It means being willing to take intellectual risk and to forge a new path. Fear is about an imagined threat, so avoiding fear allows you to actually accomplish something. Fearlessness. On the other hand, what's recklessness? Recklessness, on the other hand, means rushing into places that only a fool would go. Reckless leads to huge problems, usually on the boss's dime. Reckless is what leads us to the mortgage and liquidity crisis. Reckless is way out of style. So what's feckless? Feckless is worst of all. Ineffective, indifferent, and lazy. You want to be fearless. As a linchpin, you want to realize you do not have to be afraid of the things that you cannot change. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to worry about pissing off the boss. All you have to worry about is focusing on fixing the problem. Going out of your way to change people's lives. As my friend Tim Sanders says, you're going to spread the love a little bit. It's not about what's in it for you. The old myth of I only do things if there's something in it for me is antiquated. And if it's not already dead, it's dying. And the people that are still sucking in on that crap, they're not going to succeed in the long run. Not saying that you won't look out there and they'll be successful. And you say, oh, look at all the money they have. But you want to know something? Hollywood and politics are a prime example. Sports is a prime example right now of people that said, what's in it for me? And you see them getting divorced. You see them in rehab. You see them acting like spoiled children, and all of a sudden their contracts are busted and broke. Sadly, I've seen the same thing in direct selling where leaders forget that they're linchpins, and all of a sudden they believe that they're indispensable instead of going out there and proving to others that they're indispensable. No longer is it about a resume where people look at it and don't understand what the true value of what you offer is. Nowadays, it's really about Google. See, nowadays when people say to me, Troy, do you have a resume? I'll say, actually, I don't have one in print. I have it electronically. If you'll go to Bing or you go to Google and you just type in Troy Dooley, I think you'll find everything that you're looking for. See, that's the new resume. That's what sets you apart. Linchpins always, always, always are set apart. That's where you've got to be at today. If you want to change the world, if you want to change your financial future, if you want to change your relationship with your spouse, with your children, you've got to become a linchpin. You've got to start adding emotional value and change the world in your little world, just your little place. That's all it takes. The linchpin says, I don't want a job that a non-linchpin can get. I want something special. On Monday, we continue in the chapter, Is It Possible to Do Hard Work in a Cubicle? It's going to be great. Oh, have an awesome weekend. Remember, ACES Radio Live, 5 p.m. Central today. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here Monday morning for Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.